Good morning, and thank you for tuning into the Chamber Link. My name is Catherine Grinberg. I'm our Executive Vice President at the Chamber here. And today I am joined with three awesome guests. Starting on my right here is Doug Arvin, Essentia Health's West Region CFO. And then down to my left here, we've got Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Dakota's Market President Lacey Berg. And then lastly on the end, down on my left, is Kristen Herman, the Fargo Market CFO for Sanford. And I'm sure with the introductions, you can already tell what our topic of the day is. We are going to be talking about an important issue that faces not just our region, but across the states and the country, is healthcare and this topic. And I'm really excited to learn a lot from all three of you, hear your perspectives. I know we're really excited to talk about partnership and the role that each of you play and dive into what some solutions could look like and better understand for listeners the current landscape of healthcare, especially in our region. So thank you all for taking the time to be here out of your busy lives. And I'm going to just start by kind of introductions to lay the groundwork of who each of you are, what role you play, so that listeners can understand. And then we'll jump right in talking about rural healthcare transformation and each of your perspectives on that. So why don't we start down on the end with the ladies. Kristen, would you go first, please?
Sure. Yeah, thank you. And thanks for having me today to help share my perspective on these important issues. So my name's Kristen Herman. I'm the Fargo Market CFO for Sanford Health. So I work with all things in our Fargo region, which would include right here in the metro area, our hospitals and clinics, but our critical access hospitals out there in the region, as well as our clinics everywhere from Jamestown to Alexandria, up north to Grand Forks, and south all the way down to Wahpeton.
Great. Thank you for being here. Lacey.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me. My name is Lacey Berg. I am the market president for Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Dakota. So my role at Blue Cross is really around thinking about strategy and growth for our company. But in addition to that, really working with partners like we have in this room and across the state to think about really access, affordability, different healthcare issues that we know that we need to solve together. And so I lead our teams doing that and collaborate across the state doing that as well.
Awesome. Well, we're glad to have you here. Thanks so much. And last but not least on my right, Doug.
Yes, my name is Doug Arvin. I serve as the West Region CFO for Essentia Health. I've been in healthcare longer than I care to comment at times, but over three decades. And so we're definitely in an environment where change, if you like change, healthcare is certainly the place to be. But I do think the future, and we'll talk about that, is going to be dependent on partnerships and collaboration in ways that we haven't seen before. And so excited about the conversation today, and thanks for inviting us.
Of course, yes. And Doug, I think we'll stick with you for the first question here, if that's all right, and talking about rural communities, especially as we look across North Dakota and Minnesota, there are some challenges with access to healthcare. So not to start off right away with throwing you a challenge, but I'm curious your thoughts on what you think a sustainable rural healthcare model looks like in the future.
Yeah, I think the needs in rural America are the same as any other part of America in terms of healthcare. The challenges are more significant in the fact that we have broad geographic distances between providers at times, significant underserved populations based on primary care and other needs. And so we look to solve those problems. And so I think, again, I want to thank you, first of all, for the facilitation today and look forward to the podcasters' comments and some solutions that we can come up with together. But I think as a fundamental, healthcare in rural America is no different. It's bringing care close to home, and that's our mission, to do that and to find unique and innovative ways to do that. Funding is certainly a challenge in rural America for healthcare and with some of the recent process and policy changes that continues to exist. But I do think the Rural Health Transformation Program and legislation has identified some opportunities with that to improve access, to invest in innovation, invest in workforce and technology, to invest in just improving outcomes for patients overall. So that's something we really focus on as a healthcare provider, improving affordability, in preventive care, population health, and reducing as much as we can those complicated, expensive costs of care, which affect employers as well, not just the providers. And so we, focus at Essentia Health, and I know other providers do as well, to improve population health, accountable care results. And, for example, a real example is the $20 million we saved in the last fiscal year for taxpayers, the Medicare Shared Savings Program, to payers and cost of care alignment initiatives. And those are benefits realized by the employer community, the business community, the providers, and most of all, the patients.
Yeah. I'm glad that you touched on that, because as we were kind of prepping for this conversation, I know we were talking in the hallway about how much healthcare impacts the community vitality. It impacts businesses, and it impacts individuals, obviously. And so there's a whole host of stakeholders that are in these conversations about healthcare and how we can, you know, deliver it with quality and access and affordability.
Absolutely.
Appreciate that. This side of the room, any thoughts on, as we talk about sustainable rural healthcare models, anything else that you want to add before we jump to the next question? Nothing specifically. Okay. Then, Kristen, I'm going to call on you for healthcare being a collective effort. As we were just saying, it kind of takes all of us for the conversation. What role do you think employers, local governments, or other community organizations should play in access and rural healthcare? There's, like we said, a lot of stakeholders. So what role does that look like?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of stakeholders, and it, you know, it's too big for just one. We need all of those players. You know, for employers, right? A healthy workforce is a productive workforce. For our local governments, you know, they play a role in recruiting staff and workforce, you know, ensuring that we have housing, community amenities, you know, schools that attract people to those rural areas when making a decision of, you know, where they want to go work. And then I think community organizations are also key. They can be an important part of, you know, bridging gaps in healthcare, you know, providing extra services when people need it. A great example of that is the Peltier Lodge. That's a fully funded, philanthropic funded project. It's going to be a lodging solution for patients right next to the Roger Maris Cancer Center. So 50% of our patients are driving from 60 miles or more to get services at our cancer center. And if they need services such as the bone marrow transplant program, they can be they can have to stay close by for months on end. And so having this lodge is just another wraparound support system for, you know, patients coming from those rural areas. You know, that's really important. You know, there's numerous community organizations out there that are doing that kind of work. And, you know, it's really important.
Yeah. I'm glad that you mentioned that, and maybe definition-wise, when we talk rural, I know I didn't prep you guys for this question, but I'm genuinely curious. When we talk rural, what are we talking about is for the healthcare context of conversation? What defines rural healthcare? Anyone want to take a stab at that?
I could offer a couple comments, and they're ambiguous in
okay,
the response.
That's okay.
So it's a good question. I think with regard to just Medicare classification, there are considered urban rural facilities, and so Ascension Health, and I'm sure Sanford as well, have a significant number of rural providers by that definition. However, by the rural or the healthcare transformation program, and I would say it's a different definition. Fargo, Grand Forks, Bismarck do not meet the definition of rural healthcare.
Okay.
So that's been work that's going on with that, and without getting too technical. A Medicare payment in an urban setting is not the same as a rural setting. And so when you think, hey, that's a federal program, they're not all the same. Mm. So it's pretty intricate classification.
Intricate and technicalities. Anything from this side of the room to add or differences?
I think Doug made a great point. You know, when you think about North Dakota, Minnesota rural, compared to other areas of the country, even the mm-hmm. areas we think of as urban, if you compare them nationally, mm-hmm. Are actually quite rural. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, if you look across a state map of North Dakota, there's different classifications, as Doug was saying, for counties. But the number of counties across the state in North Dakota that are frontier counties, if you look at the population per square mile, all of those things, we have a very, very high prevalence of counties across the state.
Sure.
That are rural. And people drive a long way for healthcare
mm-hmm.
Because of that. And, you know, just thinking about the weather that we have in the Midwest, mm-hmm. right, those all become challenges for folks to be able to get to where they need to be to help the healthcare that they're looking for.
Absolutely. Sure. Well, and we're very lucky in this region for the great healthcare that we have. And so I think it does attract a lot of people
yeah.
from outskirts of town, but even quite a ways beyond mm-hmm. that in those rural areas.
Kristen, yeah, anything to add?
You know, what I wanted to add in there, and Doug hit on it with the Rural Health Transformation Funds, you know, there was no language in the One Big Beautiful Bill or H.R. 1 that really defined what exactly was rural and what wasn't. And so I think as we look at, you know, those funds that are coming into our state and how we're utilizing them, you know, in the first year of the program, they've been, you know, focused on our critical access hospitals, which is a great start. But with healthcare, it's really a continuum of care where, you know, primary care, lesser acute care is happening close to home. But when they need when you need specialized or more acute, higher acute care, you know, those where those regional hubs are really important. And so I think we're hoping to see in, you know, years 2 through 5 of the program, you know, looking at, you know, that investment in those rural dollars being part of that full continuum of care, and facilities like Essentia Health and Sanford Health, you know, being there and being able to be part of the solutions that we're coming up with how to spend those dollars to really enhance care for enhance rural health care in our region.
That makes a lot of sense as we talk about the model and moving forward and how we support the full continuum. So thanks for adding that in there. We are going to run to a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about partnerships and kind of jump more into the provider insurer. So stick with us. Welcome back to the Chamberlink. We're discussing an important topic today of healthcare, and I'm lucky to have with me three experts. We have Doug from Essentia, Kristen from Sanford, and Lacey from Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Dakota. So thank you so much, you three, for being here. Before we left for the break, we were starting to talk about partnerships, all the stakeholders that are involved, specifically with providers, and as we look at care continuum. I want to flip over to the provider-insurer partnerships, though, and get a little bit of perspective there. So, Lacey, starting with you, I'm interested on your thoughts on what a successful collaboration between health systems and insurers looks like today.
Yeah, I think it's such a great question, Catherine, and I think it's such a fundamental piece of, as we think about healthcare going forward, what is happening and what needs to continue to happen going forward. I love this question in my career. I've been fortunate to work both on the provider side of healthcare and then also now on the payer side. And when you've kind of lived on both sides, you can see opportunity for how things can come together, and I'm grateful for that. So when I think about that question and collaboration, I think really the challenges that we have in healthcare are too complex for any one piece of healthcare to solve. And that is where the collaboration piece becomes so important. And, you know, all of us have work that we do every day. It's easy to think about just, you know, right, what's ahead of us. But if we think broadly about the challenges in healthcare, really looking at quality outcomes. So if you think about the United States and just quality health outcomes, right, we spend a lot of money on healthcare in the U.S., and we don't necessarily have the level of outcomes that we would like to have for that investment. And so it's going to take all of us and each having a piece of that. So if we keep that quality of care top of mind, affordability, and then also access to care, I think in everything that we're doing, whatever seat we sit in in the healthcare ecosystem, that can help us really collaborate and stay aligned. I think, you know, if you just... I've seen some data, it's getting a little bit older now, but as of like 2020, I think only like a little over 5% of the population over the age of 35 has had all the preventive screenings that are recommended for them. So just thinking about how do we bring all that together to make sure people are getting the care that they need. And I think ultimately addressing those issues that I mentioned of access, cost, and quality, like that to me is what the collaboration is about.
Yeah, no, and you're right, it's too big for any one person to solve, or one organization, yeah. Maybe, or one piece of the puzzle, right? And especially when you're talking those big things like affordability, quality, you know, access, all of these pieces are really important. Maybe flipping to Doug and Kristen, any thoughts on ways that providers and insurers can work together to improve that quality and addressing the affordability that Lacey was just talking about?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to weigh in. You know, I think it's when we're, you know, sharing accountability, working together, sharing data to really make some differences. I can think of an example. You know, we've been working with some of our payers on well-child visits. And so when we have the data to know which patients are not getting their well-child visits or over those overdue, it's helped us, you know, take a look at our internal processes and, you know, maybe work through some things that weren't working the best way and really work towards a common goal of, you know, getting those kids in for their visits and really helping the overall healthcare in our community.
That makes a lot of sense. Thanks for that example. Doug, your thoughts?
Well, I think what's interesting is the three of us are going to say basically the same things. And access, quality outcomes and affordability or reducing costs for all the consumers of healthcare is critical. Focus on partnership. And so I think as we acknowledge the alignment in our goals, I think we can, you know, enhance our partnerships. And I've seen that actually happen, you know, in my career where payers, insurers, and providers are able to find aligned incentives to help patients, to help employers, and to help the outcomes for both organizations. So I think that's key. Also, just real quickly on partnership, I think you know, communities are a big part of that too. And so I think, you know, as we look to improve access in communities and just how they can help the providers and align incentives and align goals, you know, for a healthy population. And I use the example of Moorhead, Minnesota as a recent one that we are exploring and developing as a, you know, just enhancement to access in clinical care in that community. And so those are just perfect examples of how the community has helped support that, along with the academic community in that particular market. So those are good outcomes for all.
Mm. Lacey, anything else to add?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, when you look at all of the organizations that we represent across our communities, I think you see just an incredible dedication to the well-being of our communities. And you know, there's a ton about health happens in the healthcare systems, but a lot about health happens in our communities, as Doug was mentioning, too, whether it's, you know, making sure there's access to food or different resources that people need to have in their communities. And so I think it's such a great testament to support for the continuum of health from all of our organizations that there's certainly the medical care component of health and the preventive care, and then also just making sure that people are living in an environment that helps enable that wellness.
Well, that's a really good point, and that makes me just start thinking of, yeah, how big healthcare and the topic can be. Mm-hmm. And when we talk affordability, we talk quality and access. Those are, you know, synonymous of when we have the conversation about childcare and other pieces of you know, care in our community. And so just how wide and variety this can be, and then everything like you're talking about from even within a business, I think of, and how we're promoting healthy living and what that looks like, and then across, you know, the region and the states as well. So there's enough responsibility to go around and enough for us all to be able to do something to help with the healthcare conversation. Is there anything specifically that the business community can engage on? I think of, as we talk about all these stakeholders, you've got business leaders listening and that will listen to this podcast. What is something for them to know of what their role could be in any of this kind of partnership, or how to encourage more partnerships, whether that's advocacy or elsewhere? Anything, or the expert's got it. The business community doesn't need to worry if the expert's got it.
Well, I feel like we kind of addressed that, but as an employer who, if I was not in healthcare, I would really be interested in those outcomes, right? You know, the cost, how it's helping my workforce, how it's creating, you know, retention in the workforce and a good community for people to be recruited to. And so I think healthcare has a key role with that. I think really just asking the questions, you know, how can we bend the curve on cost, you know, in partnership with providers, I think is a key thing employers can do. And, you know, some of our efforts to improve care at the work site and get people back to work more quickly are real examples of, you know, reducing cost, improving the workforce. And so, yeah, the partnership with employers, I mean, obviously they pay a significant portion of the healthcare bill. And so they should have high level of interest in how to improve it.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, just encouraging, having employers encourage their employees to engage in their own health, whether it's physical health, mental health. A healthy workforce is a productive workforce, right? So what's good for that individual person is going to be good for their employer. And, you know, at Blue Cross, we have a program, it's called Worksite Wellness, and it's actually around thinking about how you create environments that allow people to be healthier within your business. And I think people spend a significant portion of time at work or doing work activities. And just thinking about, as employers, how we take care of our workforce as well, to Doug's point, thinking about healthcare costs, all of those things can be done upstream to help improve health, to prevent chronic conditions and costs downstream to some degree. So I think it is a really important topic for employers.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well, we're going to go to another break. And when we get back, we're going to talk more about cost and addressing Medicaid, healthcare costs, all of those conversations, and then more about the workforce. So stick with us. Welcome back to the Chamberlink. I'm Catherine Grinberg. We're having a great conversation about healthcare. I'm learning a ton. I hope you as listeners are learning it as well. So thank you to our guests that we have today, Kristen from Sanford, Lacey from Blue Cross, and Doug from Essentia. Appreciate you all three being here. And we were just talking a little bit more about partnerships and the provider-insurer partnership and what that looks like, the role businesses can play. And then I promised when we came back, we would talk a little bit more about addressing Medicaid and healthcare costs. So I want to jump in kind of in that spot. And Doug, I'll start with putting you in the hot seat here. So recent federal and state policy discussions have included potential Medicaid changes and other healthcare funding adjustments, probably something that people have heard about. But from your perspective, what are the practical implications of these changes for everything from patients to providers and communities as a whole?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I would say, again, during my career, the one big beautiful bill probably brought on as many changes in healthcare as anything I can think of recently. And it's a phased-in process, obviously, over 5 years, so people aren't seeing all the impact at one time. Overall, I would say healthcare in North Dakota has been well supported at the state level. And, you know, I would look at examples, including our expanded Medicaid program, which has helped citizens in this state. And that's not true of every state. And so it's been a good partnership there. But we know there are challenges with the state. You know, they're looking at cost and spending reductions as well in the future. So it's something for us to keep an eye on. But the two most practical things, and I won't go ad nauseum on these, but would be the impact on the marketplace healthcare, which formerly Obamacare or ability to access commercial healthcare for people. The changes there around taxpayer support has reduced the number of enrollees and has reduced the level of coverage of those who have elected plans just due to affordability. So what does that mean? It means it doesn't change the healthcare need. It just means that there's less reimbursement and support for it. And so who does that get passed to? Of course, that gets passed to providers significantly, insurers and consumers overall, because those costs and needs don't go away. And so that's one big thing about the one big beautiful bill, and that's in place today, and we're seeing impact of that. And then also the Medicaid program in and of itself, starting in January of 2027, will be impacted by new eligibility and work requirements that have been enacted. And the forecast for that will be there'll be fewer beneficiaries receiving support. What does that mean? Again, the same thing. The care needs won't go away, but the reimbursement and support can be reduced and put pressure on healthcare organizations as a result. So those are just practical examples of what's happening. Again, great support from the state of North Dakota with their Medicaid expansion program, and the Rural Health Transformation Program is also supportive. And as Kristen mentioned, I'm anxious to see the next 5 years of how that'll roll out. But those are practical things that we're seeing.
Yeah, thank you for the kind of bringing them to a practical level. You said 2027, is that correct?
For Medicaid.
For Medicaid,
yeah,
okay.
The start of that.
So you'll be able to see it in the next few years here.
Correct.
And then the impact that
yes.
It will have longer term. Thoughts on this side of the table? Anything to add, Kristen, that you want to add about Medicare or Medicaid, anything? No?
Yeah, okay. Doug did a great job of really covering it. And I think the biggest thing is that demand for care doesn't change, you know, whether people mm-hmm. have coverage or not.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. Yes, it's a tricky thing. Well, I do want to ask this question about misconceptions, because I've been dying to know, and I gave you all a heads up I would be asking this. So I'm looking forward to your responses. But what misconceptions do you think business leaders and the public have about Medicaid and its role within the broader healthcare system? I always think that, you know, I asked what from your perspective, I kept saying that what is the misconception of the broader public and business leaders? Thoughts down on this end, Kristen? Doug?
Well, I always have a thought.
Okay, tell me.
So,
I'm ready.
Maybe it'll start a discussion. I think people assume, like, the Medicaid program or Medicare or other plans, that there's a margin for providers, meaning something's left over after all the costs of care are absorbed. And the answer for Medicaid is it's not. We often categorize that as community benefits that we provide as healthcare organization, that difference between the reimbursement and the cost, and it's significant. So it is a mission somewhat a mission-aligned effort to provide care in that space. It's not highly profitable, mm-hmm. but it does impact, particularly in the when I think of infant mortality and other needs in the population broadly. You know, those benefits help, absolutely, no question about it. And so I think it's a good investment for society to make for those that are indigent or, you know, just unable to access health care in an affordable way. So I think that's probably a misconception. I think people think it's maybe easier to create economic value in a healthcare organization than it is.
Mm. Yeah, my mind was going to the same place Doug was at. And, you know, I think to tag on to that, too, you know, if people don't have coverage, it can also change their behaviors. And so they might choose to delay, you know, going to be seen for something that could be, you know, addressed, you know, more easily or in the outpatient setting. But if, you know, there is no safety net or Medicaid for them with coverage, you know, they might land in the ER or an inpatient stay, which is much, you know, much more costly to the overall system.
Mm, sure. Lacey, I want to quickly touch on the cost of healthcare too. As spending continues to rise for both employers and families, can you share what's driving some of those costs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, when you look at it overall, you've heard a lot about just the need for care. And I think mm-hmm. just continuing, seeing continuing increases in people accessing healthcare at high rates is certainly an aspect of that. I think to Kristen's point, kind of the degree of acuity of care or of chronic disease that we see also is a large contributor. And, you know, there have been a lot of advances in care and in medicine, which provide tremendous, tremendous benefit, but they all come at a cost as well. And we really see all of those things adding up to sort of drive that increase in healthcare costs mm-hmm. overall. And I think, you know, just looking at hearing both these folks talk about care delivery, there's a workforce issue too, right? Mm-hmm. Being able, workforce shortages, being able to pay and recruit the staff that you all need. I think as I go out across the state and talk to different hospitals, I hear that almost every time, just the difficulty recruiting healthcare specialty, but then also support staff to work in the hospitals. Mm-hmm. And so that all is a contributing factor as well.
That's going to be a perfect segue because we're going to talk more about workforce in the next section as we wrap things up. But in the next couple minutes before we do go to a break, I'm curious. We've talked about cost in this segment, but we've also, you know, before this talked about the quality and the access. And so balancing all of those things, Kristen, what transformational thinking or structure changes do you think that we need in order to bend that curve, that cost curve, while not sacrificing quality or access?
Yeah, you know, I think the answer I'd have to have here is really around kind of administrative simplification. So there's a really meaningful percentage of the healthcare cost that isn't spent on really, you know, that direct patient care. It's around, you know, making that appointment, which can be more burdensome than we really want, or, you know, getting prior authorization or claims, getting claims paid and things like that. And so I think that's where I'm really excited about technology. And, you know, I think we're really on the cusp of technology and artificial intelligence starting to make a really meaningful impact in this space. And I think has the potential to bend the cost curve.
Oh, that's so interesting. And, you know, the conversation of AI and technology developments, and you can really put that into any industry, but interesting on how that might be able to help with some of the points of access, quality, and affordability. So I'm glad that you brought that up. Anything else to add, Doug, before we head to a break?
Well, I think Kristen hit some great points there. The only thing I would add would just be innovation in care in and of itself, mm-hmm. To less hospital-based care, to more at-home options or virtual options. I think we'll see revolutionary change with that over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. I think AI is going to have a key role with that. So I think, again, getting the high-quality outcomes at a more affordable price is going to be critical.
Mm. Yeah, what I'm hearing from all three of you is that there's going to need to be a little bit of shift in mindset and a lot of collaboration and partnership. That seems to be something that's a theme throughout this conversation, and that all three of you at the table here today are open to that and willing to be part of the solution. So I think we're in good hands already is what I'll say from that perspective. I want to go to a last break that we have here, but then as you brought up, Lacey, we need to talk workforce because that's a big piece of the equation as well. So stick with us for one more. Welcome back to the Chamber Link. I'm Catherine Grinberg, Executive Vice President at the Chamber, and excited to have a great conversation about healthcare today. Thanks for sticking with us in this last segment, where we're going to talk about something pretty important that Lacey brought up in the last segment, which is workforce. And we talk about this in a lot of different industries, and I think healthcare, no exception, where workforce is a very important piece of the equation and sometimes a really difficult one in today's day and age. So, kind of wrapping up our time together, that's where I want to focus some time is, you know, specifically maybe starting with the workforce shortages in the healthcare field. How significant is that shortage today? And what would you say that the occupation is that's experiencing this the most? There's a lot of positions within healthcare. Where are we seeing that workforce shortage the most severe?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, it's probably the most significant challenge that we face in healthcare right now, and it's really all patient care areas. It used to be really, you know, clinicians, nurses is what we were talking about, but now it's surgical techs, respiratory therapists, you know, individuals that work in our lab. It's widespread that we are facing shortages today. And so it's a challenge that we all need to work together to come up with innovative solutions and, you know, how we're going to address that. And I think it goes to the theme we've been talking about. Partnerships is a huge one. Mm-hmm. You know, our partnership with the UND School of Medicine to help train our physicians locally, our partnerships with our local universities to, you know, grow programs, and our partnerships K-12. We've got an Aspire program at Sanford Health where we work to get in front of students at an early age to teach them about healthcare and all of these jobs that they maybe have never heard of before, to get them exposure and interest into the healthcare field. And so, you know, there's a lot going on in this space, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, partnerships and really training our workforce locally.
Oh, that's great. How about, Doug, what you've seen on the workforce shortages? Where is that? How severe? Any thoughts?
So I would agree. It's a challenge today, and it's going to be more of a challenge in the future. And you think about the, you know, supply and demand. I mean, the number of baby boomers, which happen mm-hmm. to be part of that group, who are getting older, needing health care, and that population, the percentage is growing about as quick as any group that there is. However, the workers, the workforce at the younger age, not growing as quickly, and so what does that mean? I mean, it means that access, which we've talked about throughout this program, can mm-hmm. be compromised, right? If nursing workforce is short, or therapists, or radiologists, or pharmacists, I mean, they can all have an impact in delaying care. Physicians and APPs as well, and so that's a real challenge. I think strategically, we need to continue to invest. In that workforce, we need to, Kristen, same kind of concepts healthcare organizations are doing, partnering with academic organizations to look to, align their needs and to tailor solutions in the employment arena, and then the physician needs as well. And it can be a challenge to, you know, recruit throughout the United States. And so that's going to continue to be a challenge for us, you know, to try to grow residency programs, to build to cultivate interest at a young level, a young age level, and to, you know, keep people engaged in the work, because mm-hmm. it's highly critical.
Yeah. That might be the double-edged sword of such a great healthcare system here and ecosystem is you need a lot of workforce for that, right? And to make it happen. And you were just talking about all the specialties, Doug, and you really need a lot of different roles to make it all happen and to be that hub that you were talking about, Kristen, where people travel here for the care that they can receive in this region. And I will say it's a firsthand experience that I was at the doctor this morning and there was an intern there and learning. And so it's great to see young people that are interested in these careers. And I also have to give a shout out to the nurses and doctors and other healthcare providers that are helping train them, right? That can make a big difference who your mentor is and how they're responding to teaching you. And it's been really great whenever I'm at the clinic to see that interaction and them helping them and learning and walking alongside them is really cool to see. Any other strategies as you talk about partnership and business engagement, higher education, any other strategies in the states of North Dakota, Minnesota, or locally that you've seen that work really well or areas we can double down on as a business community to help support, you know, what is this quality of life and helping you all attract and retain a workforce here? Anything that comes to mind?
Well, I think the Rural Health Transformation Fund, that is one of the key, the five legs of it is retention mm-hmm. and recruitment and rural areas. So I think that would be in addition to all the work the providers are doing, you know, to sustain the workforce. So, you know, that's a key investment, and that, frankly, I think it'll pay dividends for in return.
Kristen, Lacey, anything to add over here that you've seen?
I think, you know, just helping remove barriers for folks that are interested in healthcare is such a, you know, key thing. If you think about higher education costs, mm-hmm. You know, scholarship opportunities, different things that can be put in place. I know all of our organizations have different things to help people who are interested in healthcare, you know, get the training that they need. I know we do that from a Blue Cross perspective through the Caring Foundation. We have some health scholarships really focused towards people who want to stay here mm-hmm. and be caregivers here. And so I think just as a business community, really thinking about how we can come to the table to encourage our folks of any age who are interested in a career in healthcare.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you said it well, Lacey. You know, we have to look for new innovative solutions and, you know, giving people access to, you know, those careers. And, you know, a couple of recent examples I could speak to specifically is the University of Jamestown, you know, partnership with Sanford has started an accelerated nursing program really geared at those non-traditional students, right? Mm-hmm. So helping them find a way to get that nursing degree in a different setting, you know, that works for them. So those are the kinds of things we need to do to really help attract that workforce.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then when we get them here and then you're all training them in your facilities, how do we as a community help keep them here? You know, that intern this morning, I asked her where she's from, and she's from South Dakota, came here for school, and now is really liking the region. And so I said, yeah, I also moved here and had never left. So I'm like, stick around. And how we can help students be able to find a home here and connect in. And that's some of the work that the Chamber's working on in our workforce efforts, no matter what industry. But, you know, this is a very critical one of how we can help with that pipeline. As we have just a couple minutes left, I want to ask kind of a rapid question here. Real easy, don't worry. It's just about the future and what we see, so I'm sure it'll be easy. In 5 years from now, I'm curious, what do you hope healthcare looks like for patients, employers, and communities across our region? And if we could keep it like 15, 20 seconds. Doug?
Well, I'm just going to say I'm optimistic about the future. I don't know all the answers over the next 5 years, but I do think people who get into healthcare have a passion for making a difference in people's lives. And I think that existed in my generation. I think it continues to exist. So I'm confident that that will continue to be the case and that we'll continue to find solutions to community needs.
Oh, awesome. Lacey?
Yeah, I hope that people feel like healthcare is simpler, you know, that it's easy to access the care they need, that they have the tools that they need to manage their health as best they can on their own, and then access to great services for where they need help. I feel like nationally, there's just a lot of chatter about healthcare right now, and I hope in 5 years we've solved some of the challenges we've talked about today to where employers feel confident in the healthcare, their ability to provide healthcare access and options, and each individual does and feels empowered as well.
Awesome.
Yeah, all great answers. I would say, you know, just accessing that care closer to home. And so, I mean, that means even in their homes, you know, reducing our reliance on acute care settings, skilled nursing facilities. Really, as we live longer, you know, we're going to have more an aging population and, you know, more chronic disease. How do we have technology and other solutions that help keep the patients, you know, accessing that care close to home?
All great answers, and I will say, I know we talked partnership was a theme. I think optimism is also a theme. So thank you three for being here. Thanks for the discussion, and join us in a couple weeks again for the Chamberlink. Have a great rest of your day.